Well, good evening. I'm George Davis, Vice Chairman. Already broken something. Is this working? Very working. Vice Chairman of the Summer Power Meeting, IEEE. We welcome you to our first and only evening session. I'm glad you could break away from the spots of Disneyland and Orange County and be with us tonight on our special session. Special session titled Credibility and the Public Trust, What Can the Power Industry and the Media Do, or What Can We Do About It? Now, why did we decide to have a non-technical session in a technical five-day meeting? We're all electrical engineers or associated with the business. Well, many of you may have noted that the IEEE is branching out, speaking out a little more on some issues that are not narrowly technical but are social. For instance, look what the Spectrum magazine is doing. Some people agree with this, some people disagree with this approach. We in our industry are finding out that we are talking to ourselves too much. We're holding our own hands, wringing our own hands. Maybe we should be listening more to some of the people who are really making the decisions today. Now, early in the day, we heard Dr. Alger, our Power Life Award winner, mention that politics is the most important profession. Somebody agrees, some people disagree, but those of us who've been working in these efforts to provide the energy sources and the energy services lately know that most of the decisions that we're now making are politically oriented, politically motivated. So this may be and is becoming a fact of life. Bob Sandberg of EPRA this afternoon said that it is the language by which we speak to the public, either in or out of this political regime, that is the problem. Bob said that we should face up and let's start doing something about it. Many of us in our own industry thought that our industry is credible, that we were doing great, but if you listen to the results of some of the polls and some of our successes, I'm not so sure. As an example, in the last few months, I have been associated with a project, and one of the efforts were to find out from people more about the pros and cons of credibility. For instance, one of the questions was asked, if you wanted to find out more about the good and bad, the pros and cons of this project, how reliable or unreliable do you think certain sources of information would be? And there were a group of media sources and a group of non-media sources. Now, the media sources, the TV, radio, and newspaper, how do you rate them as credible? 69% said the TV was credible, 64% radio, and 57% newspaper. TV, radio, and newspaper in that order. And 67%, 69%, that's pretty good. But now how about the non-media sources? And this, again, is in decreasing order of credibility. 65% thought that the environmental sources were the credible sources about projects, energy projects. 53% credibility to the business leaders, 46% to the elected officials, 34% to union leaders, and 34% to utility spokesmen. In other words, we drew up in our normal strategic location, the rear. And that's pretty frightening, and maybe we should be doing something about it. So that's what Bob Sandberg said. Let's do something about it. So this is one of the reasons why we're having a panel session tonight. And without to do, we'll get with the panels. Now, you've all had the brochure, so you know all about the participants. Our moderator, Frank Jenkins, fellow of IEEE, vice president of the Power Engineering Society, vice president of transmission electric installations for Duke Power. Just give Frank a hand. Put your hand up. Good night. One of our panelists, James Foy, communication positions in industry, participated in Golden Mike Award for editorials, now KNBC editorial director, Jim Foy, down there. The man who had a beard in the picture, he doesn't have it now, conservation writer, studies in energy affairs, environment and the public interest, now environmental conservation and energy affair writer from the San Jose Mercury, Tom Harris. And one a little more associated with us, Bill Hayes, Naval Science from Brown University. I've been there. Mechanical Engineering, Senior Member of IEEE, now Editor-in-Chief, Electrical World, Bill Hayes. And somebody close to us, Ed Myers, our Mr. Enthusiasm from Berkeley, Stanford University Graduate School of Business, attendance there, Vice President of Southern Cal Edison, responsible for our activities in community relations, public information, area development, energy services, ex-call marketing, and so forth. Ed. And the man who didn't have a picture, but there he is, Larry Pryor, BA from Stanford, graduate journalism from Columbia, Louisville, Kentucky, LA Times, stories on air, water quality, nuclear, and such, Larry Pryor, down in the end. Now the format, Frank will be the moderator. He's going to present some key thoughts. Then each panelist will look at key issues and assess and make recommendations to hopefully improve this understanding of the issues. Then we hope the panelists will engage each other, and then you, the audience. And we would like succinct questions, succinct answers, and really keep the thing moving. So Frank, are you ready? Very good.
Thank you, George. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is a new adventure for us in the Power Engineering Society. We look forward to this as being an opportunity to learn, to have a good interchange in a non-confrontational exchange of information and ideas. You'll notice that this session is being taped. I believe there is a note on the platform over there, and I understand that to those who want tapes, they will be available for you to purchase at sometime subsequent to the meeting. We have existed in a state of confrontation for nearly 40 years. There's a lack of trust among nations. Even nations that are allied for mutual support do not live in a state of accord. Statesmanship is perhaps at an all-time low. There is division among national political parties. Mutual respect and trust are lacking in affairs of government, commerce, education, and industry. It seems that the expected norm of life is to conduct our daily lives as if adversary proceedings and confrontation is expected. The electric power industry has done more than any other industry to lighten the burden of man, to make possible the things that make for a pleasant life. There's probably nothing that has been developed and produced that did not require an adequate supply of electrical energy. The electric power industry is the most capital-intensive industry in the world. That is, more investment is required to build and maintain the electric power industry than any other industry. With all the good that has resulted from the plentiful supply of electrical energy, the industry has been characterized as greedy and self-seeking. The motives and integrities of the leaders of the electric power industry have been maligned and questioned. Some general questions can be raised, and hopefully the discussions that we have this evening will provide some insight for us in the industry as to the answers. Have we failed in our responsibilities to communicate with society in general? How can a newsman tell he's getting a fair shake from a utility? Do utility people have a healthy view of the media? How do utility executives stack up with other industry executives in this respect? What can utilities do to change the situation for the better? Are media representatives generally uninformed or misinformed about the utility, its problems, goals, successes, and failures? Do news executives and reporters trust utility representatives? Big business, including electric utility business, seems to be on trial in the press. Why is this true? Why is there seemingly a definite anti-business climate? Are news articles becoming more biased? Do editors screen articles to make sure analysis and opinion doesn't slant stories out of proportion? Is it true that news headlines are sensational and often misleading? There are critics on the scene to make controversy of every issue. When the press features the opinions of critics, should that critic's background and credentials be explored as a part of the article? These are just a few of the questions that we are hopeful that some answers will result from in this interchange. And now to pick up and to give his formal presentation on the program, I'll call on William C. Hayes, Editor-in-Chief of Electrical World.
Thank you and good evening. The public emerged from the recent energy crisis with three basic premises in mind, and already I'm in trouble because I've started to argue now that we haven't emerged from the energy crisis. But as I see it, they emerge with three premises in mind. The first being that since electrical energy is the end result of the combustion of oil, that the easing of the oil supply situation would ensure an adequate supply of energy, electrical energy. Secondly, they learned that coal is in abundance in this country and should supply the electrical requirements for hundreds of years, therefore ensuring an adequate supply of electrical energy. Thirdly, we learned that conservation had a very positive effect because by conserving oil again, it ensured the long-range supply of electrical energy. There is only one thing in common with these three premises, and that is they are all dead wrong. And the conclusion that they have led the public into believing is also wrong, and that is that the energy crisis is over, at least in terms of the electric utility industry. It is my belief that we are heading rather for the most severe crisis that we have yet faced. The reasons for this, I'll go over them quickly. In terms of coal, I think it's been documented in the press, in the media, that there is abundant coal. But coal in the ground, as you all recognize, is not coal in the stockpiles. And I don't think it's necessary to document the difficulties that this imposes upon us. But dealing with the oil situation, the easing of that situation and the return to some sort of normality in pricing and supply will, of course, ease the impact on the public in terms of price. The fuel clause has come in for a great deal of discussion and has come under a great deal of fire, and this will obviously decrease with decreasing fuel costs. But there still will remain tremendous upward pressures on the price of electricity. There will be factors exerting pressure, such as the cost of money, the decrease in the benefits from increasing technology, the decreasing rate in the increase in productivity that we're experiencing. In conservation, while conservationists will love this, it has had an effect, but that effect has been disastrous for the electric utility industry. What it has done is effectively stifle the flow of revenue without providing the necessary offsets in the construction budget. That still remains to be proved. I'm hoping I will be proved wrong, but I foresee that for this summer, we will see this happening. The inability to raise rates responsibly to these situations will then make financing, if not impossible, extremely difficult and shortages inevitable. But now, if the public holds these impressions, and I think they do, and if they are misconceptions, why then do they believe them? I think it's basically because of the imperfection of the communication process. And I'm not just talking about the process of the utilities communication. I'm talking about the imperfection of the process of communicating from utilities to the media, the process of communicating through the media to the people, and from the people back to the government. Our problem, then, boils down to trying to work through a highly flawed process to make our needs known, understood, and accepted. Now, this is going to be darn difficult in the current atmosphere of distrust of industry, distrust of institution, and I understand even distrust of government. But utilities have a very specific credibility problem because recent events have shattered a myth, a long-held myth, and that myth is that the utility industry is a public servant. Certain conditions have permitted the existence of an apparent paradox in the role of this industry. Simultaneously, we were permitted to be profit-oriented and yet perform as though we were a public servant. Now, the declining cost structure permitted this. It permitted very quiet rate decreases, which enabled the profit aspect of our business to be unobtrusive. We gave away light bulbs. We fixed appliances. We cleaned furnaces. We replaced fuses. We dedicated ourselves to providing service which is unparalleled in the history of the world, and we've made ourselves indispensable to the public wheel. We've even called ourselves things like public service company, consumers' power, people's utilities. But increasing costs have finally made the paradox truly emerge. The fuel clause, the constant round of rate increases, the harsh public attacks of environmentalists and consumer groups shattered the myth, and the public now is capable of seeing us as some kind of industrial Dorian Gray. The facade of public service, pure and simple, has shattered, and we're more often perceived as people with faults and flaws. We are seen as being more concerned now with dividends than with protecting the customer. We are accused of being callous in passing on fuel costs in a period of rampant inflation without the accountability for efficiency. We are accused of gouging the poor through our meter deposit policies and through the minimum block structure. We are accused even of cutting off the elderly in the dead of winter, which we have done. We are accused of being unresponsive to public demand for environmental enhancement. We are accused of being, most of all, arrogant in our monolithic position that we know what is right for the country. Now, given this picture, and it's a grim one, and I think while not everyone obviously holds all these views, enough people hold enough of them, it is going to be difficult to establish any kind of position of trust and credibility. There's only one way it can be done, and it has to be done that way, and that is through the very media that has had such a prominent role in destroying the trust in the first place. To do this is going to require some awfully hard decisions on the part of this industry. And the first decision is the decision to deal with the media with complete honesty. I can see hackles rising in utility executives already. Corporation lawyers throughout the history of this industry have raised barriers between the company and the media. Now, I think from a legal viewpoint, this may be defensible, but the game has changed, and it leads now to distrust and to lack of trust, to lack of credibility, and to antagonism. I can quote personal examples. Let me quote you just one. I think Electrical World has proved its right to be trusted by the industry, and yet, 2 years ago, we learned of a fire in a nuclear plant under construction. We learned that it was a serious fire involving about $1.5 million worth of damage. And we called the public relations department of that utility and asked them for that story. We were told that in truth, it was a fire in a tool shed and that the damage amounted to some tens of thousands of dollars at the most. We knew this was incorrect. We asked them to please come back to us again. Several hours later, they did and informed us through the vice president of public relations that no, indeed, it had been a fire in a construction shanty and it amounted to some thousands of dollars. This was the story that appeared in the local press. It did not appear in Electrical World. It also proved to be totally false. It was a fire in a nuclear control installation and it did cost $1.5 million. After that, how much trust will the local papers put in that utility? How much will they believe what they say in the future? How friendly will they be? The second hard pill we will have to swallow is we will have to stop being condescending to the media. Now, this is an industry of experts. It's a very stable industry. Nobody leaves this industry except by death and retirement. Nobody gets fired. We therefore become experts. Every one of you is an expert in your field. Let the one next to you ask and you'll find out. What we don't accept is that the people from the media, and you'll forgive me if I say we, I've been in the industry too long not to, the people in the media are also experts in their field, and they have a right to be treated this way. It is absolutely essential that we accept their unsophistication in our field, and that we work with this and through this, and not give them the veiled contempt that we give them with the type of material we give them. I can recall first joining Electrical World after 20 years as a utility engineer, and World, I think, has a special place in the industry, and I can remember yet the feeling of walking into a utility office and being looked upon as a journalist. It was quite obvious. I took to wearing my Taubate key and letting my coat fall artfully open, and then people recognized that they could talk to me. And I think the third thing we have to do, and this may sound funny, We have to put our faith in the ultimate judgment of the American people. Now, 10 years ago, I would have laughed at that statement. But I don't laugh at it now because I've come to believe it. I don't know who the people are. It's some faceless mass out here. But I do know that ultimately they will have their way. I think that has been proved historically. The process is painful, and going through the steps to get there is difficult indeed, because it goes in three steps. First of all, with a situation such as we perceive growing now, the experts perceive it happening. We know. We, loosely used. Secondly, when the first symptoms appear of what we knew long ago, the politicians react. And you know how they respond. And thirdly, in response to that, the people act. And they will act emotionally and with an ill-considered temper at first. But ultimately, they will assess and evaluate the situation and see that it comes into law the way they want it. Now, we must, at all costs, resist the temptation to deal with the short-term situation as a palliative. The final judgment is what must be addressed. Now, we can only be sure of the rightness of that judgment if we're sure that their inputs are good and we're sure that their inputs are true. So it comes back to our basic premise again. It's the truth that will make us whole. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Bill. And now we have Larry Pryor, environmental writer of the Los Angeles Times.
Thank you, and it's a pleasure to be here. I would first like to tackle a semantic problem. In my presentation tonight, I've aimed most of my remarks to the industry, to the IOUs, to the investor-owned utilities, but for those of you who are associated with municipal or federal power agencies this evening, I would kindly ask you to substitute whenever I talk about a board of directors, you might just think in terms of commission or congressional committee. And whenever I talk about stockholders, please think in terms of city council or Congress, and I think that we might be able to get through this language barrier. I myself perceive of the problems of the public power agencies as being similar in many respects to those of the investor-owned utilities, so I don't see any great problem, but when I do use a word like stockholders, just feel free to convert in any way you wish to. I would first like to start off by saying that I think that the benefit of a panel session such as ours tonight is that we have an opportunity to destroy some myths. The word has already been brought up, and I'm glad it was. And I'm afraid the energy field is overloaded with myths, with misconceptions that are held in newspaper city rooms, corporation boardrooms, executive offices, and out there beyond the friendly borders of Disneyland. And like pulling weeds, if we can get rid of some of these misconceptions, something constructive might grow in its place. I think we are beyond the point where we can afford the luxury of finger-pointing and name-calling. If images persist of the media being constantly negative and always looking for a scare headline or controversy, a myth that I have heard voiced by more than one utility company executive, and if images persist of the utility and energy companies as being greedy and rapacious polluters and gougers, myths that are commonly held outside the industry, then I think our society is going to be in deep trouble. The long-term energy situation is now so grave, contrary to the euphoria that has followed the reopening of gas stations, that nothing short of an entire revamping of how we communicate this problem will save society from chaos. And if you disagree with me on this point, then what I have to say from now on may be of little benefit. If you think that the status quo in the media is going to be good enough for society to get by, then by all means, stick with what you're doing. Full-page ads in newspapers and magazines, letters enclosed with bills, news releases, annual reports to stockholders, mobile display wagons at county fairs, and cooking demonstrations on small TV stations. But I don't think that all or almost any of that is working. I perceive a public that is becoming increasingly hostile towards the power industry. The feedback I get is one of frustration, aggravation and anger on the part of the majority of the public that uses energy. I think this is a highly volatile and dangerous situation because if it continues, at some point, just a few short demagogic statements by the right politician at the right time could do enormous damage to our country's technological capability, particularly its ability to create power efficiently. The basic problem I think we both share is that the long-term energy shortage is too complex to explain. Both of us, you in the industry and us in the media, would like to boil the whole thing down so that the man and woman in the street can grasp its significance, so that the public can make decisions rationally and do things differently to help the problem. And those actions can range from cutting down on the use of electricity or cheerfully paying an electrical bill that is 20% higher, depending on your point of view. But neither of us is doing a decent job of boiling the energy crisis down into an intelligible, understandable terms. As I said, we appear to be headline hunters, and you appear to be profit hungry. Both of us obviously need to reform. From our standpoint, I think newspapers should open up more, present more diverse but informed points of view. We're trying to do this by opening up our columns opposite the editorial page to statements or reasoned arguments by informed people in the power industry. This is a good start, but unfortunately, in my opinion, what ends up getting printed there frequently looks self-serving, just like the full-page ads. We've got to do a lot more than this in the media, and some newspapers are already showing the way. For example, there should be a prominent and consistent place in every newspaper and radio or TV news program where past mistakes are corrected. The New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and 60 Minute Hour are examples of how this is done successfully. Every newspaper should have an ombudsman, a top news executive, who is empowered to investigate complaints of unfair or inaccurate or distorted coverage. The Louisville Courier-Journal has had such a man for a decade, and the program has been a great success. Every newspaper, magazine, radio, and TV station should also have an in-house critic, someone who regularly analyzes in print or on the air what a lousy job so-and-so did on such and such a story. This hurts. It's painful. But the Washington Post, among others, has found that it works. The object is to keep the media from being becoming arrogant, if we aren't already arrogant, to keep us from believing that we see all and know all. Institutional reforms that will open up the media to self-criticism and outside feedback, whether it be from your industry or from our environmentalists, will help keep us news writers more accountable. And when we become accountable, instead of ethereal, academic, untouchable, or vindictive charges that I fear we are vulnerable to, then I think we will do a better job of reflecting the real world and communicating it to the public. Parenthetically, we used to be called lazy, uninformed, and drunken, but these, of course, are myths. Now, if we in the media open up our houses and let in some air, and if that sounds like I have a bias against air conditioning, you're absolutely right, then similarly, I think the power industry has to do the same thing. Let me briefly, at a safe distance from the wrath of stockholders and the sour looks of boards of directors, indicate what I think has to be done on your side. First, the power industry has to come clean on rate increases. You have to do a better job of explaining why utility rate increases are going up logarithmically. And if you can't explain it, you're dead. There's no other word for it. What comes across now is that rates must go up in order for profits to go up, so that you can secure more capital to build more power plants. And that means when the average member of the public dutifully reduces energy consumption, you hit them with a higher bill because you are experiencing a revenue reduction. This path is leading to political and economic disaster for the industry, in my opinion. If the average person believes you are raising rates solely in order to raise profits, you are in deep trouble. I think the industry is going to have to rethink its rate structure policy. I'm sure you've heard all these phrases: flatter rates, peak power pricing, more equitable rates between residential and industrial customers, preferred rates for people on Social Security or fixed incomes. So far, I get the impression that the industry opposes most or all of these innovations. But unless the power industry demonstrates a social conscience when it comes to rates, I think it is in trouble. Moreover, you will have to relate flattened demand curves to the need for less power output, which will reduce your reliance on more capital, which could be translated in the long run into lower rates. Moreover, I think the approach of the IOUs of trying to put as many costs as possible above the line and have public utility commissions put the fat below the line is leading to enormous public misunderstanding. In most states, the public utility commissions never make clear what was cut out from above the line and placed under the line on an item-by-item basis. And this procedure ends in total confusion. Secondly, I think you have to include your public relations departments and the people who do your public opinion polling into the decision-making process of your companies. The way I've seen it work, on the authority of internal memos, by the way, Decisions are made on high, and your PR people are asked to put a good face on it. If they were consulted regularly before irrevocable corporate decisions, such as the location of a power plant, were made, just as you routinely consult with your engineering staffs and your legal staffs when making a big decision, I think you could avoid a lot of grief later on. Third, I think that all private companies in the power field should open up their board of directors and make them more visible and accessible to the public. Annual reports should be sent to all customers, not just to stockholders. There should be some institutionalized form of open planning, of regular input from an informed public. You should put women, not just more women, but women, on your boards of directors. They constitute a good percentage of your stockholders, more than half the public, and an even higher percentage of power users, yet they have no corporate voice at all in your industry.